Welcome to Podtendo's Legend of Zelda Retrospective. We are going to be primarily looking at Majora's Mask during these next few shows. We are going to be doing a deep dive into thematical elements, gameplay, and the design of this game. Enjoy.
I don't have to yell, that's pretty exciting. Welcome to Podtendo's Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask Retrospective. We are going to be doing a deep dive into thematical elements, gameplay, game design, and the characters that have helped create one of the most challenging narratives in any Zelda game. We are going to spoil the adventure, so if you haven't experienced this game for yourself, or it's just been a while, go play it before continuing or continue listening, or play along with us over the course of the year. That's right, a whole year dedicated to Zelda. Although, I think we're only planning to do 10 total episodes, so like, in October we ran out of steam, and then we just do something else. But anyways, unlike Ocarina, Majora tends to be a bit more of a cult hit. True Zelda fans, and I put that in quotation marks, I know you can't see that, but I said it, will claim it's actually superior. It is now up to us to see if we can give it a fair chance and critically break down where Majora's Mask falls and succeeds its predecessor. I don't really like the way that episode sounds, or the way that reads. So, I'm your co-host, Mick, joined every episode by my lovely and talented co-host,
Dyson.
Good stuff. So, back at it, playing a little Zelda. It's good times.
Yeah, we're playing a fun one. Lots to do, lots to explore, and a whole world to get involved in and cause nothing but mischief and maybe solve a problem or two.
I thought we were stopping the mischief, but you're right. Maybe we are also not.
We may also cause a little, but it's fine.
Might have also caused some. All right, cool. So in our first episode, this is part two, we looked at the pop culture landscape. We looked at what life was like when this game was made. Its first appearance. That was a weird sentence. I don't know why I read it so poorly. We shared our first experiences, discussed the intro to Clock Town, and ended with a Link Battle Royale. We were undecided what the outcome is, by the way. Today we're going to look at the development details, the first two dungeons, and talk about a mysterious area of Terminal. Scary.
Yes. And we have a madman wearing a mask to stop. We're almost like Batman.
Yeah, we are. We are almost like, we are kind of like Batman. Cool. The Legend of Zelda, Majora's Mask. So the vital stats of this game is developed by Nintendo. It sold 3.36 million copies. It was released October 26th, 2000. How long to beat has this game? About 20.5 hours. Where to play? You can play it on the N64, 3DS Remake, GameCube, or Wii. Good stuff.
Yeah, no love for the Wii U apparently, but
does anyone have love for the Wii U?
I'm sure there's one person out there that's like, it's actually a really good system. So I'm sure that one guy that had one good experience with it, like, we all moved on to the Switch as soon as we could because it's a better system. But
yeah, I mean, it was like a good, it literally was what would happen if you had a Switch and a Wii mated, it'd be the Wii U. So
Yeah.
All right, cool.
We needed it as a stepping stone to get to the Switch.
100%. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's stupid Wii U. It's dumb. It might have been on the Wii U. I don't know. I didn't spend a lot of time playing that. Anyways, on to the development details. So between Link's Awakening and Ocarina of Time, we saw 5 years pass, four of which were needed for game development. By reusing the game's engine, a smaller team needed only 1 year to finish Majora's Mask. They faced the issue of following up Majora's Mask, which sold 7 million copies. They only sold about half. The solution they came up with was make the game's data more compact while still providing deep gameplay. The idea of time constantly looping was inspired by the 1998 film Run, Lola, Run. Majora's Mask first appeared in the media in 1999. It was called Ura Zelda, which it was meant to be a side story to Ocarina of Time, and there was plans to use lots of similar elements, kind of like Master Quest. In August, they showed pictures of the game that included a large clock at the center of a city, a timer at the bottom of the screen, and the Goron mask. That same month, Nintendo confirmed that Ura Zelda and Zelda Gaiden, another project being worked on at the time, were separate projects. Ura Zelda became the Ocarina of Time Master Quest and was released as a bonus disc for the GameCube. Majora's Mask was ready for the holiday release in 2000. Majora runs on an upgraded version of the engine used in Ocarina of Time and requires the use of the Nintendo 64's 4-megabyte expansion pack, making it only one of three games that requires this peripheral. Can you name the other two?
Donkey Kong 64.
You're right.
And Perfect Dark.
Oh my gosh, he did it. Wow, that's amazing. I couldn't have done that, so good job, Tyson.
Nailed it.
Sweet, sweet. So IGN theorized that the need for the expansion pack comes from Majora's Mask originally being on the Nintendo 64 DD. The use of the expansion pack allows for greater draw distance, more accurate dynamic lighting, more detailed texture mapping, and animations. Cool stuff.
Yeah. Interesting that they had to, that this game kind of got the premium service of, like, you know, coming with the established engine, got to use the bigger expansion pack, and yet it sold half as many units. Kind of sad. Maybe that's why this game does get, like, a lot of love from all the people that played it, because we all kind of see it as, like, it didn't get as much love as it deserved. It's a really neat little game. And I think that the world that they created is impressive considering all the, like, the limited 1 year to development time. Like, that's nuts.
100%. And this world is not massive, but it's really intricate. It's super detail oriented, right? Where the clock town itself runs like a clock and everyone's on a set little path and you can kind of interact with them and talk with them. And they do the same thing every single day, every time you kind of go through the cycle. Really neat. But I think it was just coming down to the marketing campaign. I remember it kind of being marketed as this, like, darker game, and there was, like, a scary kid, and it was, like, in the middle of a room and he was playing a system, and the Hardy Boys at one point were in a commercial for it. And it just, I don't know, for some reason, I loved Ocarina of Time. Majora's Mask seemed like too much of a departure from the, you know, the swashbuckling adventure I was looking for and the bright environments. And this one seemed kind of dark and scary. It didn't speak to me as a child, so I imagine that's why it only sold half as well. But then people realize, they're like, oh, this game's actually really good once it was out and we have to play it. So,
yeah, I guess to simplify it, it would kind of be like Ocarina of Time's the adventure game, where this is kind of the story game.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, this is definitely the narrative, right? Like, I know we talked, we did Final Fantasy VII last year, which is a rich narrative. It's super strong, lots of cool elements. And then you look at Ocarina of Time, and there's almost nothing. It's kind of like, go get 5 of those stones. There you go. Thanks. And this one is very rich depth and lore, and the deeper you dive into it, the sadder it gets, right? And it's bold. It's a bold direction that they went, you know, and it's too bad they didn't surpass, you know, or get close to that 7 million copies so that they'd be encouraged to do more cool stuff like this, but can't win them all.
Yeah, and I think that the road that going down a heavier, more Ocarina of Time and inspired development gave us the, probably Wind Waker, and then Wind Waker probably gave us the you know, eventually down the line gave us Breath of the Wild. So I ain't complaining.
Yeah. No, not at all. Anyways, so let's get back specifically to this game. I mean, not that we weren't not talking about this game, but let's see what's going on in this episode. So the story so far. So while searching for our friend Navi in the Lost Woods, we fall victim to a group of bandits, 2 fairies, and a skull kid wearing a mysterious mask. They steal our horse, we give them chase, and we fall down a tree. Maybe we die? Skull Kid turns into a Deku person. We give chase, meet the mask guy, do some tasks over the course of 3 days before retrieving the Ocarina of Time. We play the Song of Time, returning to the start of the first day, and become a man again. Hooray.
Yeah, very exciting. I mean, that moon was really going to mess everything up. So luckily we prevented that. Didn't stop it, but we prevented it for now. So we definitely need to make some progress and try to get that moon to stop crashing.
Yeah. So now we're back in Clock Town. I think we learned the Song of Healing or something like that along the way. And we're like, cool. We can now explore the city as an adult. There's outstanding items to get, like maybe the Great Fairy Mask, which might be important. And I think there's 2 heart pieces I can think of off the top of my head. Other than that, it doesn't really offer anything special. He just kind of wants you to move. You know, you know the environment, you can walk around, but really there's no point, so.
Now that you're no longer trapped as Deku Shrub, you can now actually run around as Link. Mm-hmm. And people seem to treat you differently, which might be racist.
It might be a commentary on how we treat people that look a little different. They don't like Deku persons. On to the southern swamp. So our Tattle, I think that's the little fairy, tells us to head through the southern gates to the swamp. We learn how the once powerful Skull Kid, or playful Skull Kid, was taken over by an evil mask via cutscene. Once we arrive in the swamp, we have to save a witch, ride a boat, and visit a palace. Oh. So there's cutscenes in a Zelda game, the nerve of some people. And this is a much different area from just anything we saw in the Ocarina of Time. I do not like the sequences in this game. They always mess me up. Oh, the potion shop. So, cutscenes. Let's start there. It's kind of neat that they have cutscenes to tell the story in this game.
Very uncommon in a Zelda game, which is neat. Because, like, I mean, we're getting lots of story. Yeah. We just finished talking to the mask salesman. And now, like, you know, already back to... Here's another story. And it's cool, the witch in this one, on a side tangent, that, like, the... Which is like one of the twin Rovas or what the heck they're called. It's like, aren't you a bad guy? Why am I helping you?
Yeah.
Like, imagine people, if this game would have sold better, we might have actually had more narrative Zelda games, because it's just not a thing. So very cool. And I like that they actually expanded it, and they're going to keep developing the story, and it's not just like tell us a quick little bit and then leave it to our imagination to fill in the blanks. We actually might be traveling along a similar path that the Majora's Mask kid,
the Skull Kid.
Skull Kid. Why can't I think of his name?
No idea. Apparently, you weren't using the brain that's in your skull, so think about it.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so just like we said, there's a part where you have to go see a witch so you can ride a boat, and you have to go talk to her sister who runs a potion shop, and then you find the witch in the woods, but you have to then go talk to the witch in the potion shop who then gives you a potion and a bottle, and then you take it to her, but if you have the potion before, you can't have the potion beforehand, and it's just, I really don't like that sequence. It just... I always forget. I always do something wrong. And I'm always like, damn it, I went the wrong sequence. Every single time. All right. So now we're on to the Deku Palace, though. As a Deku person, we can gain access to the palace and meet the king. He is mad since his daughter was kidnapped by monkeys. The monkeys say it wasn't them. So we play Metal Gear Solid, learn a song, then another song, the Song of Soaring, before making our way to where the princess is hidden.
Yeah, pretty cool invasion. We're invading another little palace, kind of similar to the palace from Ocarina of Time.
Oh, but, yeah, they did it then, huh?
Yeah, but cool that it's like almost like right after. It's kind of like following the same blueprint. But yeah, playing as Metal Gear Solid, like Deku Shrub, is so much fun.
Oh, so. Yeah, that was my only note. I was like, epic. Role-playing as Snake. It's great. A lot of fun. Not a terrible sequence, although I just don't like how humid everything must be. That's just a meep thing, and you're probably like sticky and sweaty. Just not a fan. Not a fan at all.
Your boots are definitely wet. Ugh, always.
Great. Onto Woodfall Temple, though. So the long and short of this temple is you find a big room with poison water. Use the Deku's person ability to explore to the left and find a bow. You can then explore to the right. I might have mixed those up. I think you go to the right first, then you go to the left, which leads us to the second floor. Along the way, we can clean the poison water out of there, find a boss key, and kill a frog. We can then travel via flower to fight the boss. And the boss here is the jungle warrior, Adalwa.
Kind of an interesting little level. I think in the remake, they switched some of the fairy positions, which is like, who cares? Because I don't remember the N64 pattern, so it's never like I was like, oh no, this really throws me off. I always thought that the poison water was kind of a neat thing, because it's like, you know, you're used to being able to just swim around, but it's like, no, you literally can't. If you fall in that, you will start getting wrecked. So something to be careful of, and if you're bad at platforming like I was back in the day, I know I struggled with it a lot, so I feel like the poison water really wrecked my day.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, that is one of those things where, I mean, once you understand how 3D Zelda works and you don't fall off. But again, this is pretty early on in the 3D craze, and like, you probably weren't great at Mario 64. You'd probably go play it now and you're like, oh, I understand. Now that I've had 20 years of 3D gaming, I understand these environments. So yeah, a little bit more challenging. I think it's fine. It's a fine first dungeon, right? There's not too much trial and error. You can probably figure it out. Like Tyson did mention, there are 15 missing stray fairies, and if you collect them all, you get some type of upgrade. So that's pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting stuff. The Great Fairy Mask, like I mentioned, if you get it in Clock Town, it's nice because when you put it on, it'll kind of sparkle if there's a fairy in the room. So it kind of just does help minimize how much time you spend running around looking for them, as well as it attracts them. So if it's like up in a corner and you shoot it, it'll kind of come to you. So there are some benefits there. Yeah, I didn't write anything for Adala. In the original N64 version, you can just fight him, I think, shooting with your bow, and he dies. Very simple. Or you can drop Deku seeds on him as kind of like a little like bomber with your helicopter mode and your Deku side, and then attack him with your sword. But you have to do kind of a combination of both in the 3DS remake, and I like that they've just added more to this really easy boss, essentially. Like in the N64 version, he's over in a snap. In the 3DS, I like that they kind of took a step back and they added like an extra challenge to him.
Yeah, he's not a hard boss by any imagination, because he is kind of like the first boss in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a cool design. He's got like a tribal mask and like the music that he's always chanting and dancing. That's when you want to like strike him, because you know he's not like he's not gonna wreck your day, because his sword is pretty strong. I think it does like 2-3 things of damage. So you want to be careful, because you don't have a ton of health at this beginning of the game.
It's true. Nice. On to overworld cleanup. So before we kind of move on in the adventure, just things that you might want to like tackle. So again, there's 15 fairies. Make sure you get them now, especially since the level's mostly complete. It either gives you the spin attack in the original N64 version, or double magic in the 3DS remake, which is nice because double magic is awesome. There isn't too much else. I would say that the Deku Butler race, and you get the Mask of Sense, is kind of nice. Then you just don't have to double back and save the princess again. Or I guess you actually save the princess, who was taken by the Skull Kid and locked up in the Woodfall, back to the palace, dump him out. She, like, jumps on her dad, which is kind of funny. Hooray!
Yes. Good to save the princess, but I mean, when we play that Song of Time, I bet you this all resets. So best wrap up as much as we can while we're here.
Yeah, now, depending what day it is, I would recommend on day 3 going and doing the Bremen mask in Clock Town. So that's just another mask you can get that like makes you a little marchy guy. And then that helps you unlock the bunny hood, which is awesome. When you put it on, you run faster. I can't play this game without the bunny hood. So that's usually one of the first things I get kind of after this point. And you know, that's kind of it for the first section. So now, if there's enough time, you could go do the first part, like the Goron Shrine, but if you're again close to that timer, you could just reset and start with a fresh set of eyes.
Yeah, and I think that you can do a little bit more Skulltula hunting and stuff, but there's plenty of time for that if you're running short on time. So
I think that the shrine though you're talking about, you need to have Goron Link to get them all, because you have to ground pound.
Yeah, you can get them all, but like you can do a good chunk of it if you're bored. But
gotcha. I don't know. Yeah, fair enough. And you can always like double back. Cool. So now we're on to we went south. Now we're told to go north. So now we can head to the Goron Shrine. So we can use our bow to gain access to a frozen mountain. And if we trudge along to the far side of the Goron City, we can find an owl, get the Lens of Truth, a Goron ghost, and finally get the Goron mask. With this equipped, we can visit the Goron Shrine, find a crying child, search for his frozen father, and slowly and painfully learn the Goron's lullaby.
Yeah, the way that the Goron's lullaby, I think, is the only really weak spot of this. Kind of, I like this area. I mean, I don't know. After replaying Ocarina of Time, the Gorons are like really chill. I really like them. I think that they have kind of like one of the most important areas. Like next, like you get a lot of stuff after by the time you're done the Snowhead Temple, but yeah, I think it's very cool. Like this is where you can, like the guys that will help you upgrade your swords.
Yep.
And then the crying kid kind of sucks, but don't,
yeah.
If you just turn off the sound, it's not so bad.
So I think Goron Link handles really well in the snow. It's kind of fun. You can kind of roll over these lumps and take some jumps, and he goes really quick, and it's neat. But man, that it's a really annoying sequence. I almost never remember how to do it. You kind of have to like play a drum or something, or you learn it from the frozen dad after you talk to him like two or three times, and then he shows you the first part of the song, and then you show it to the kid, and then he plays it, and everyone falls asleep. Something like that. It's just, I don't know. It's nothing. It's annoying. Yeah. Although,
the dad freaks me out because he's really old and has this goofy lip that's like hanging down.
It's kind of gross.
Freaks me out.
Yeah, I get like I said, I never do it. We will talk about it. You can do the sword upgrading basically at this part of the game. Doing it before you play the temple would be really fascinating. Like as soon as you get there, and then just kind of warping, because then you have the razor edge sword. And I've never played this game with the razor edge sword. I just use it as like an upgrade.
Right.
Huh.
I like it because I mean it. This reminds me that getting the sword upgrade reminds me of like Link to the Past. But instead of having to wait to like and doing all that back and forth between the Dark World and the Light World to get the upgrades for your sword, it's kind of like that. But it's neat. Like I like it. I think it's like anytime I get a sword upgrade, I'm gonna take it. So.
Yeah, fair enough. Sweet. So at this point, I would recommend using your kind of your Goron speed to roll up through the snow to get up to the Snowhead Temple and save, because you kind of want to do the next section in one cycle, and you don't want to have to like go back and beat the boss. I mean, I guess that's an option. You just go beat Goat and then kind of carry on, but it does kind of take a full cycle. So again, just let's start fresh. So we're resetting, and now we're going to head to the Snowhead Temple early on day one, maybe slow down the time if we can. And we're going to head into the Snowhead Temple. And this level is like an onion. It has different levels. I think the joke is layers, but I screwed that up. We have to explore the second floor, solve some block puzzles, find a key, gain access to the third floor. From here, we have to transverse a tight walkway, kill a Wizrobe, and get the fire arrows before continuing up this vertical level. If you aren't searching for stray fairies, then basically you just need to refight a Wizrobe, ensure the proper levels of the pillar is showing, and make your way to the boss, which is the giant mechanical goat.
So to start, man, that giant Goron that blows you off the edge is such a jerk. Like, What an absolute jerk. Like, he literally kills one of his own people just because he's a impolite person that can't cover his mouth.
Yeah.
And you have to put him to sleep, so then he goes to sleep. Kind of wish. It's just like, it seems like so like oh yeah, no, there's like clearly a dead Goron, clearly by this other guy, because he just blew him off the edge. And you're like, I'm just gonna, this game is dark. Like, it's not shying away from death in any aspect. So then actually in the shrine, it's a pretty standard shrine. I think the boss, is this one of the best bosses in the game? I think so.
I think, I'm going to make the argument. This is the best level/boss combo in this game, maybe in any Zelda game. So this is a very, very solid level. There's a big pillar in the bottom, and you have an option of kind of dropping it down or up. As well as there's four changeable levels. So you can kind of punch out the levels with the Goron strength. And that gets you access to different parts of the temple. Super intricate. It really uses the use of vertical space really well. And you couldn't recreate this in a 2D game. Maybe they try, but I don't think it's as well done as this, right? And I think that's really neat. They really used the space. They used kind of the medium they were on to create such a fun, intricate level. It's not super hard. It's not super challenging. It's just that right level of sequence. It's what I want in a Zelda game. And the original fight, I don't know if I want to tell this story, but I'm going to. I used to listen to Limp Bizkit's Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water, specifically like Rolling or My Way. And just play this, and just like turn this game on and just play this boss. Go back, revisit the temple. You could go right to the boss and you just kind of replay them. It's kind of fast paced. It's actiony. You're like rolling at high speeds. You can jump into them. Super fun. I love it. I think it's just, it's an absolute great, when I was kind of done, I was like, I love this. I don't like the stuff that comes after this, because I feel like there's just a lot of like little nitpicky things that you have to kind of to do to kind of before you can move on. But this, like this combo, excellent.
Yeah. The sense of speed when you're rolling around is really fun. Like, I mean, Nintendo always does good racing, but like, I mean, this was fast-paced action, like kind of feels like modern Mario Kart, but it's a N64 game, and I could see why you would go replay it, because I mean, we all have those like little things you find in a Zelda game that are kind of repeatable. Like some people like obsessed with the fishing game and Ocarina of Time. You were replaying this one. Sometimes it's just about like enjoying a certain area of a game a little bit more than others. There's always like little neat nuggets that just kind of like just speak to you and just kind of give you just endless joy by just being around it. So I think that this is a really cool one. And yeah, the rolling, there's some platforming rolling that I'll concede it's a little bit tricky and can get frustrating, but for the most part, yeah, this is such a high peak part of the game. It's so much fun.
Yeah, no, excellent. It's really strong. And maybe I just like playing because it's my way or the highway. There you go. Throw it to Jacksonville's favorite son, Fred Durst. Never thought you'd talk about Fred Durst in a Majora's Mask podcast, but I did it. I did it.
Well, we drew the line.
We did it. So now we have two masks. So every time that we fight one of these bad guys, we get a mask. We see a cutscene of us talking to this like big, weird-looking guardian looking thing, and I kind of hate how they look. They're this big face with these big long legs and big long arms, and they don't have a body, it's just a big face. I hate them so much. But at this point we've rescued two of them, so that's kind of exciting.
Hooray. Yeah, but they look freaky. Like there's something, like there's like uncanny valley.
Yeah.
And then there's these things.
Yeah.
And like these things will haunt your nightmares. And I think that like it's one of those few times where you're like, I think that like, you know, usually it's games are filled with cliches where like the bad guys are hideous and ugly. It's like, no, the things you're saving are just even more hideous and terrifying and have long gangly legs.
Well, maybe, and based on the fact that these are new characters, they only exist here, they were created for Majora's Mask, maybe it was nice that they reused lots of Ocarina of Time's assets instead of creating their own, because if they were to create their own, they would have looked more like these monsters.
Yeah, and I don't know if anyone, just when we have a free minute, just go look at these things. Like, they look
like
disturbed. Like, what is going on? Like, they never missed a leg day, ever.
Yeah, they're just Termina Guardians. Four Giants. Is that what they're called? Yeah, they're
so cool. And they also have, like, a weird chanting thing that goes on, and it doesn't sound good. It sounds off. Sounds out of key. It's like, yeah, so maybe it's a good thing that they like Mick said, reused a lot of their assets, because I think that if I was the lead develop person, I'd been like, no, you don't get to develop things no more. You're bad. You go to the corner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, look at these pictures. They're just so, I don't like them. I don't like them at all. Where were we? So some overworld cleanup. So before we kind of move on, now we've done pretty much half. I mean, this game's pretty short. We've already beat two dungeons. Lots of overworld stuff. So the next episode will be specifically looking at levels 3 and 4. And then we'll be talking about side quests probably in an episode. And, oh no, we'll do a whole episode on masks. So that's what we're doing. So we're doing 3 and 4. We're going to do a whole mask episode, or we just kind of dive into all those. And then we'll do a fifth episode that kind of does like other side quests that maybe you can do that might be fun in this game, and 3DS versus the original and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of our loose layout. You don't care. You're just having fun listening. It's more for me. So there's a lot to do before you can move on. We can upgrade our sword from the regular sword to the Razor Sword. And I absolutely love the design of the Razor Sword. I think it's so neat. I wish we could kind of have it for longer. I usually have it and then just basically warp to the dawn of the second day. You can do the trades. So you can collect the fairies. So if you, in the original, you'll get the double up magic. In the 3DS remake, you get the spin attack. You can unlock the powder keg item, which is actually a key part of this, and you can't progress in the game without it. You can go back, take it to the racetrack to race, win some gold powder, and upgrade your sword to the gilded sword. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and the Gilded Sword looks almost it looks a little similar to the Link to the Past.
Mm-hmm.
But the Razor Sword has such a cool like design to it. It's like very Final Fantasy almost.
So I've got the, I did, while we were talking about swords, because I was thinking about the Razor, like, sword, would it be worth it? So the Kukiri sword does 1 point of damage, and you would need to kill, for like an enemy, let's say 12, whatever scale they're using, it'd be 12 hits. The Razor sword does 2 bars of damage and would take 6, so it's half as strong. The Gilded sword, however, does 3 bars of damage and would take 4 hits to kill that enemy that took 12 for the Kukiri sword, so it's kind of neat.
Wow, so the Razor Sword is a pretty big upgrade, but the Gilded Sword is more of just like a little bit better past that. It's like it's your iPhone.
It goes a half
as opposed to an, like an iPhone like 1 to an iPhone 4.
Well, it does a half and then a third, right? So yeah. The big jump from the half, which is a lot, and then a third. So it is that just that smaller amount. The Great Fairy Sword is another item you can get in this game that we'll talk about in the next episode, and it only moves up to a 3. So You're moving up a 3/4, a quarter at that point. So,
Well, we'll have to keep an eye on this for our Link head-to-head battle that's going on.
Cool. So now that's done. We have our sword. We can reset the time, and we can start fresh. What are kind of fun stuff we're doing next time? What are kind of horseplay we're going to get up to? Woo! All right.
Yeah. Well, right. We'll see. We'll see. Right. I was gonna make a bad pun on outer space, but I can't think of one. So,
yeah. I mean, I bet you the adventure
out of this world.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's all. It's gonna be out of this world. Silly. Well, hopefully you didn't get wet feet. I don't think that's an expression either. All right. Well, let's end with finally a mysterious area of Termina. So I keep searching up Termina. Google thinks I mean terminal. No, Termina. It's a place in Zelda. So this isn't so much creepy as it is disturbing. As we continue our journey through this very creepy Termina, we see many familiar faces. One such is the magic bean salesman who lives in a hole near the Deku Palace. This is a stretch, but you plant a seed, water it, and gain access to the upper levels. Did you know that in the Wind Waker, the Kokorox, or the little tree people, who kind of act like Deku people, just saying, I have a side quest. They ask you to plant seeds all over the Great Ocean. What if the planting the magic bean in both Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask is some kind of like sick genetic experiment where we mix Kokiri DNA with Deku DNA and make these weird hybrid monsters? And what if these seeds aren't just for transport, but rather they're for birth port or something or somewhere in time? So that's one theory. So like maybe it has something to do with like that's where like the Kokorox come from. Is there like Deku seeds and like magic beans and there's mixing? Or somewhere in time, a Kokiri and a Deku did it. So they made it. They procreated. Maybe the Deku prince that we see at the beginning of the game heading kind of towards the Lost Woods was actually on a booty call to go see Saria before he was killed by the Skull Kid.
Well, you know, they do talk. In our language, they do move. They got some dance moves. So I'm sure, like, you know, everybody's got their, like, you know, their fix. I don't know if it was Saria necessarily, but, you know, I never know with those Kokiri kids. That Milo kid sure seems like he's up to no good.
Well, there was that cute little blonde girl that was hanging out in the Lost Woods and knew that the Skull Kid. So, like, maybe the Skull Kid was, like, running booty calls. Cute little blonde Kokiri girls.
Maybe that is who the Skull Kid is. You know, maybe he is that first generation of the hybrids. Because he does kind of have that beak feature, but he's also a little bit more gangly, like people-y.
Yeah, like maybe we were finding some type of weird genetic kind of breeding, you know, like, and he's traveling between these two areas and he meets the Deku people and he's like, hey, I know where there's some like cute fairy, like forest girls that are into these, like, and you know, and like there's this weird mixing.
Maybe he's like the half the missing link, where you know how like a horse and a donkey can make a mule, but a mule can't breed with anything. Maybe he's like the reverse, where like a Deku and a Kokiri once mated, and now he's like the missing link that fills in the gaps and spreads as he travels through time and space and messes around with not only just the landscape of the land, but also the genetics of all the people.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, these are all things that may have happened, and now you're going to think about it. And maybe you're even going to Google some fan art later. So either I'm sorry or you're welcome. And also, isn't that whole theory kind of mysterious?
Yes.
So this is definitely one of the least mysterious and just kind of more like, I don't know, how thirsty are these little plants in the forest, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I feel like they didn't have sentience, and now they do. Because, like, that weird tree shrub, like, mm-hmm. what's his deal?
Yeah.
And I mean, we did hang around, we did go inside a giant tree to start Ocarina of Time, so I mean...
Huh. Interesting.
Read into that what you want.
When we fell into a big tree and, like, got to this world, maybe, like, that guy was a temple, but other big trees are also, like, all right. Cool. Well, there's lots to think on, lots to chew on, just like this game. Lots of weird stuff going on. So cool. So with that, that ends part two. We're getting ready for part three. We're going to be playing through the Great Bay and Iconic Canyon, which actually has a lot going on. So it'll be kind of a rich episode. Let's see what happens. So good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I got to say James Bond.
Yep. Sounds good. 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 And other than that, I think we're kind of out of here. We're done, right? So.
Yeah, that was a quick one. I know lots to do in game, but when you're talking about it, I mean. Mm-hmm. I don't need to explain to you how many times I fell off of a platform. I'm sure if I was a YouTuber, I'd make a fail compilation of that. But
yeah, I could see that. I can see Tyson not liking the use of the vertical space and the snowhead because there's a lot of way to fall down.
Yeah, I'm platforming and then backtracking and mm-hmm. platforming. And you know, my favorite thing, I'm sure our average listener will know that my favorite thing is platforming, and I'm really good at it.
Nice. All right, cool. So with that, we'll see you guys back here in a month for part three as we kind of carry on through this. And then I don't know exactly what we're doing in 2 weeks, but you'll see a numbered show. So it's good stuff. All right, bye, guys.
Yep. Bye.